Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Hi, Christina here. Before I introduce my guest for this week's show, I want to take a minute to personally invite you to Wealthy Wealthy Live. This is my biannual mastermind event held here at my house in Austin, Texas on February 28th and 29th. Wealthy Wealthy Live is two full days of learning, transforming, contributing, and relationship building. If you've enjoyed these episodes, you'll love my live event. It's where we go deep on the different subjects and conversations I have here on the show. One day is Wealth Day, fully dedicated to discussing the science and art of making money and building business. And day two is Wealth Day, where we'll be discussing new age knowledge for optimal health, love, and anti-aging. I bring my personal network of unconventional finance leaders and medical doctors to share their genius on how to be wildly wealthy, healthy, and happy as business owners, entrepreneurs, and leaders. It's truly an unrivaled mastermind. It brings the brightest minds and biggest hearts together. Multi-million dollar deals are made here, and even new romances have begun. Not to mention, yours truly will be sharing her wise wealth building strategies and more. To learn about the speakers and the event itself, go to christina.com/WW Live or just reach out to me personally. You know how to find me, christina.com/WW Live. Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I talk with Laura DiBenedetto. If you wish to have more joy in your life, this is a must listen. Laura shares the science of feeling joy and a simple method for shaking the funk, self-doubt, and limiting beliefs, and replacing them with rock-solid confidence and positive feelings of joy and connection. She also shares the master habits of the most successful people who are also the happiest, how she rose from a situation of domestic abuse and turned those lessons from that part of her life into business and financial success, a new healthy marriage, and a life of lots of laughter and daily walks on the beach. Please enjoy my conversation with joy-filled Laura DiBenedetto. All right, Laura, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you and to follow up from our last conversation, but do this one on air. How are you?
Awesome. Really awesome. How are you?
I'm good. So you are in Hawaii, right? In beautiful Maui?
Yes. It's really extraordinary here.
Funny enough, my last podcast interview that I had today, he's visiting Maui. So I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just a Maui day. I guess I'm supposed to be in Maui vicariously through the two of you.
Yeah, but I think maybe there's some signs pointing to you ending the vicarious and just hopping on a plane. I'm just
saying.
Just saying.
All right. Let's jump in. So for everyone listening in, you and I had the wonderful opportunity to be introduced to you and to get to know you a little bit. And I said, oh my God, girlfriend, we just have to have this conversation and let everybody listen in because you are remarkable. So for everybody listening, just share a little bit about you, like who you are and a little bit of story so everybody can get to know you a little bit and what brought you to where you are here sitting with me today.
Sure. Talking about yourself, that's always weird, isn't it? Well, I'm a young entrepreneur. I started my career at 19, and I started my first company at that age. And I've experienced a lot of things, and I was able to retire at 37 and then pick up my whole life, move it to Maui. So that's pretty extraordinary. But the journey between those two dates holds a lot in terms of like overcoming, you know, some abuse and overcoming like a lot of mental stuff. And it's been a hell of a ride. So using everything that I learned in my career and a lot of my own personal triumphs to be a genuinely joyful, happy, abundant person, I'm now focusing my energy on bringing the pathway and the light to the pathway to others. Because joy seems like elusive for a lot of people. It's like, oh, I want to be happy. But then people sit and scroll on their phones for like 2 hours every morning. And I'm just, I don't know, joy's my jam. So I'm all about helping to find ways to give it to people.
That's what we're going to name this. Joy is my jam. That is so good. I love that.
When you and I talked,
I don't know. I just felt kindred spirits that we shared a lot in common. And I only interview those that are wildly successful and have usually overcome a lot to really arrive where they are at the moment. But huge success in their career, a lot of wealth, a lot of money, a lot of expertise, and many and most are pioneers. They've taken a lot of arrows in the back, or they've just kind of had life handed to them, and they just somehow get back up and go for it again, you know? But in so many times when we're listening to these podcasts and we're listening to all these, the great stuff, what's missing are the trials and tribulations that are built into the story.
I fully agree. You know, absolutely.
I'd love to just go there with a little bit with you, if you don't mind, talk about a few of these things. I think life's been, you've had your life handed to you a few times and you're still here and you are joyful and you are living this and overcoming things. So, and again, I think I've had some similar experiences. So first of all, you are beautiful. You are strong, successful, independent. Yeah. You are, I love something you said, like, I didn't marry this or inherit this. Like, everything you've seen, I've like bootstrapped this in my life and I've done it. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the domestic abuse, because I think what happens many times when women find themselves, let's say, in any type of abusive type relationship, if it's domestic, if it's mental, spiritual, emotional abuse, abuse is abuse. And there's kind of that shame that comes along with that, oh my gosh, if I'm independent and strong and I'm all these things I think I am, how the hell would I wind up in an abusive relationship? Like, what does that say about me type of feeling? Yet I've heard so many stories of women that have strong, amazing, independent women find themselves in these types of relationships. So would you share a little bit of story there and anything that you have to say about what you felt about yourself then and how you look at that now?
I would be delighted to. I think this is such an important topic for people to discuss. It's not discussed enough. And that in mind, there's something really powerful I want to start with. I think for the women and the men, and basically anybody that's gone through an abusive situation, we can find ways to be grateful for it. Now, hold on. This is where you hear records scratch and people freaking out. Grateful for the abuse? What? The reason why is because it shows you what you're made of. That situation, not the abuse, but the situation pulls incredible strength out of you, incredible resiliency out of you. It gives you an opportunity to shine unlike most good things do, you know? So when things are easy, you're not tested, you're not pushed, you're not stretched, you're not forced to rise. But my abuse situation, it brought a lot out of me that, to be honest, I'm not sure I would have seen unless I'd gone through that. So, I mean, to be clear, part of my work in the world is all about gratitude, and that's a big pathway to joy. And I choose to be grateful for the lessons that I experienced and the things that I went through, for what it showed me of what I was capable of. Turns out I'm made of fire. Neat. I didn't know that before. So I entered this relationship when I was like 18, 19, somewhere in that window. And he was older than me. He was 38 at the time. You would think that would have been a big red flag. You would think. It was not. So he had, he was charming and, you know, everybody liked him, but he also could be a real monster. And he started out being verbally abusive behind closed doors. And he was my first sexually. And he became sexually abusive. He was psychologically abusive and physically abusive a few times. I'd like to tell you that I left the first time. I didn't. But I left the second time. And it was just, it was very traumatic in terms of like what I experienced during that time, just the abhorrent behavior that was directed at me on a regular basis. Like during that time, I had never been so low. You know, I had a rough high school experience and grade school experience. I was bullied like crazy. So it was psychologically, it was almost a natural next move to go into yet another abusive situation, which is really deeply messed up. But the human mind does what the human mind does. And we tend to go toward what we believe we are worthy of and what our pattern seems to be. So I found myself in this circumstance and I was incredibly low. The second time he got physically abusive with me, I don't know why it was okay for the other ones, but that one apparently broke this, you know, broke the camel's back. So, I left and I stayed with my parents and I remember staring at the wall just for hours on end, just like almost traumatized, dazed, just in deep grieving and really not knowing why I was alive or what's the point and questioning my value. I felt really like, why am I here? Like, nobody loves me. I feel like crap. And of course, the nobody loves me was not true. My parents loved me. I had some friends. But when you've been so beaten down, it's so easy to feel that way. And I remember actually having some difficulty finding a job. I was looking to find a job and I was already like going, like I was on the heels of this abuse. I couldn't get hired. And then I got a little angry, Christina, got a little angry. So I'm just like, you know what, world, double middle fingers to you. I'm done. I'm going to start a business. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to start a business. So I was just tired of people not treating me the way I wanted. And I started my company as a defiant act of glorious rebellion. And that was a good decision. I'm happy about that. So I don't know where else to go with that.
No. Well, I'm just glad you show that because I think that this is probably more common than we realize, but we don't talk about it because there's so much shame attached to saying, oh yeah, I was in an abusive relationship. It's like, what does that say about me that I would put up with it or tolerate it or, you know, be in that? And so like once you're past, it's like, all right, I'm just going to shelf that and not talk about it because, you know, there's that shame attached to it. So anyway,
this
just
is actually
like
the first time I've talked about this in a long time, because this is the weird part. There's not so much even shame in me talking about it. People feel ashamed to even ask you about it. But it's a conversation almost like miscarriage. It still needs to happen and it enriches everybody when they learn more.
Yeah, I love that. All right. Well, thank you. And like, where else? What are some other beat up moments where you just found yourself kind of in a pool on the floor, kind of bleeding out and just wondering what the hell, like how am I going to pull myself out of this one?
Well, being an entrepreneur for 19 years and being a person that sells very expensive services and all that other stuff, I was down quite a bit. The sales will teach you something about yourself too. You really got to get okay with no and learn to love it and let it kind of challenge you and spur you on as opposed to define anything about you. I mean, I experienced a lot of sexual harassment in my role, in my leadership, in my sales efforts. I had people be very dismissive to me because of my age. I mean, I started a company at 19 years old, you know, there's like business networking events going on and they're, you know, they're being held at like a local bar or restaurant or whatever. And if it was a bar, I'm the young entrepreneur at 19 and I'm trying to go and I don't even know what I'm doing. And then, you know, I already feel uncomfortable. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're not old enough. I'm like, yeah, well, I started a business, change your rule. So it's interesting how many times I got kicked down for being too young. Other women were jealous of me because I was really young, really just out there and trying to be my biggest, fullest self. That scared a lot of people. Men wanted to talk to me for the wrong reasons. And people didn't take me seriously, but, that changed over time. But then the, you know, sales conversations over the years, they continued to bring a lot of, hostility and bullying because people don't like to, people don't like to engage in the sales process. So, again, that taught me so much about myself, how to sell. I'm an extraordinary salesperson now because I've learned to remove essentially every single obstacle. It's like, no, throw your worst. I got it. So,
yeah, I love that. It's kind of a, you got to do better than that. That's not going to, you know, hurt my feelings or whatever the case is.
It's come like, at me, bro.
Yeah. Come at me. So there's a couple, there's a, you know, there's just so much about you and your life story that I find very fascinating. And one thing that you share, like on your website, is, you know, career one and career two. And I really love that because I think we get trapped into one identity that we're supposed to do one thing for the rest of our life. And by God, if you pivot and leave one thing and for another, like, you can't do that. It's like, it's against some rule somewhere. Yet so many people will stay like status quo or slightly unhappy or because, and a lot of it is fear. Like I'm afraid that if I left this, how am I going to start over after 10, 20 years in this other place and start over again for, mm-hmm. let's say career number two, and really attach that fear. But I just love that about you is that, all right, that was a part of my life and that was awesome. And that was career one. Great. Now done. Now I'm going to go reinvent myself and be career number two for this next period of time, forever that long. Yeah. Maybe there's a career three or four, who knows? But so share a little bit about that. And even I know that you incorporate that into your work, into your coaching, as far as helping people get over the fear and maybe move from one career to the next. But what is that that allowed you to leave one for another?
Honestly, I love this question. It's so cool because you're good at asking the questions that people don't talk about. So I actually remember so many people in school. What do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. Happy? Rich? Millionaire? Living on an island? Check, 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 check. You know? But it literally never occurred to me, and no one ever gave me the invitation to be like, so which collection of things would you like to be when you grow up? No one ever asked me that. And it didn't occur to me until I was about 32 that you are not just one thing and you are not stuck. And the only reason I discovered that is because I was getting burnt out and I was really tired because, I mean, when you hustle and you work your buns off for like 75 hours a week for years on end, it physically makes you sick. You get stressed out. You lose yourself. You do a lot of crazy things and you're not thinking like, oh, I could do something else. It's just, it's not even on your radar. You didn't have time to think about it. But I was really going through some rough stuff. I was having a really hard time with my ex-husband and things were just really starting to get to me. You know, the sales stuff we talked about. I'm a person of very, very high integrity. It's one of my core values. In a sales role, your integrity is consistently called into question. And that began to really, really erode and wear away at my internal joy and the light that was in me. So that's when I was like, do I really have to do this till I'm dead? And like just starting to ask myself, I was like, no, I don't. And so then I started to ask myself, how can I fire myself but still keep the money? So I worked on that for a number of years, and actually to find like career number two, it took me a long time giving myself permission because, you know, I had fear. I was like, is this all I'm good at? You know, should I just go get a job? Is anyone going to find me useful? Who's going to want to hire an entrepreneur? They'll be afraid I'll take over. And they're not wrong. You know, like is this going to work? And I believe it or not, like I was at the like pinnacle of my career. I was kicking so much butt and I was doing so well, but I was still riddled with self-doubt about my value in the world. And I wasn't sure of myself. And I was like, oh my God, what do I do? How do I make the leap using everything that I am and everything that I love and everything that I know to do something totally different? So I started doing a lot of soul searching, trying to figure out what that meant. And, you know, I really thought that I was going to be opening a really fancy schmancy Italian French upscale bakery. I'm not doing that. I was wrong. So, I had invested like thousands of dollars into going down that road. And when I came to the realization that although I was talking about different things, I was feeling the same way that career number one that I loved and was grateful for and all that, but the low points of it made me feel. And I was like, I'm basically just having the same conversations. I actually had to walk away from that. And something inside me kind of broke and I surrendered. And as a person that's loaded with all that masculine, pushing, driving, let's make stuff happen kind of energy, feminine energy, no, I was like about 1% proficient in it. And I needed to just really surrender and just sit and be still and just allow things to gel. And then I started writing and journaling and figuring out what I needed for myself. And that's where career number two just kind of punched me in the face. It was crazy.
Yeah. But what I hear is like having the space and the permission to have the time for it to come punch you in the face, as opposed to that fearful, anxious, oh my God energy that is like, I need to know right now what that next thing is, because how can I replace this if I don't have something to replace it with? And it's like, no, it's like, I would compare that to a lot of times like, okay, I don't really like the relationship I'm in, but I'm not going to let this one go till I found the next one.
Yeah. That stillness was probably the most valuable time of my life. So I was at, when was it? It was summer 2018, and I was scheduled to take 3 weeks off at the end of summer. I mean, anybody that sells professional services, they can tell you the last 3 weeks of summer, like of August, and the last 3 weeks of December, why work? There's kind of no point, because everybody's like, oh, we'll talk after Labor Day, or we'll talk after the holidays. Cool. So I'm going to enjoy my pool. I'll see you later. About 3 days into my 3 week hiatus, I was like, okay, this sucks. I'm not happy. And I was like starting to get really mad at myself because the whole bakery thing was not working out. And I was angry, you know, I was angry at myself. And it's like, it's not because I was like insecure. I was like, oh no, I need another job. I need more cash flow. Like I have that money still coming in. I wanted to still be valuable. You know, and I say that just in a very raw human way. I still wanted to be needed. I still wanted to be important. I still wanted to like flex my mental muscle on a daily basis because I like to think, I like to solve problems. I love to serve and help. I just had to change how I did it. So I actually started to help myself. So I was like journaling and sitting by the pool and I was just like thinking about stuff and I'm like, why do I feel like crap? Like, I don't understand this. And the more I write, the more I start to problem solve. And I'm a person that naturally sees patterns occurring. So the more I was writing, the more I was like starting to look into things, then I got excited. And then I busted out the index cards and I'm like, wait a minute, there's patterns here. And I just started scribbling and notepads and moved inside. The dining room table was an absolute disaster and a flurry of paper. And I just started seeing the patterns and noticing that I wasn't necessarily happy because I didn't have the right habits. And, you know, I mean, as you know, money's great, but what you do with it is more important. And I had some really negative habits that I needed to address. And in the process of allowing myself to be uncomfortable, allowing myself to be miserable, allowing myself to feel like crap, that hunger for an answer came bubbling out of me. And that's where I ended up creating a 90-day program for myself. And then I ended up writing a book out of it and just this whole thing. And it's like, you know, when they say like you see like in the movies and like the little light bulb goes on or above the character's head, it was like a full chandelier of lights going on above my head. It was exhilarating. I wrote a book inside of a month. It was like, it was bananas. I was just completely on fire. And I was even questioning, I was like, oh, is this my purpose? This is my purpose. But when it never stopped being fun, never stopped being fun and was consistently awesome and made me feel good about myself and continued to help me like serve and show up and experience like profound joy, like actual deep to the marrow of your bones kind of joy. I was like, I'm onto something. Oh my God. Well, I'm going to share this.
Yeah. Well, joy just comes exudes out of you. Like you can't fake this shit. So I mean, it's just, that's where like I just resonated with you when we talked for the first time, like, oh my God, I just love her. So one thing I want to go back to, she said something earlier on, and it's the self-doubt piece. And that's so deep within our core. And we think that if we have enough money or success, that self-doubt's just going to evaporate. And I don't believe that to be true, that a lot of very successful people I know, and many, and believe me, I've been here too, and lots of zeros, they're still riddled with self-doubt. I mean, the self-doubt, they still, no matter where they are, they still think less of themselves, or they're not good enough, or they're not successful enough, or they don't have enough money. So because it's that self-doubt piece is driving that narrative.
Yeah.
So when you said you know, you said yourself self-doubt, but What do you say? Like, at what point from your experience and your point of view does the self-doubt dissipate? Because I don't think you can have that joy and self-doubt. I mean, there's moments of self-doubt, but live in self-doubt and have this amazing joy at the same time, because part of joy comes from this, I love who I am and I love my life and let's go, you know, that comes out. Let's kind of a confident, not even a confidence in the sense like confident in our role or something, but just this confidence of who we are, this knowing that that's where this joy exudes from. But if that self-doubt is in, like that's where FOMO really kicks in, fear of missing out, not just, you know, on social networks and that type of thing, but that opportunity, if I don't go after that opportunity, for example, then, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So it's like the self-doubt and this fear that's driving the success, which I believe robs us of the joy, regardless of how much success or wealth we have. So one, what do you say to that? And then two, do you have any type of advice or prescription for how to like evaporate that self-doubt?
Well, I think you're onto something there. And joy and self-doubt, believe it or not, they can have a relationship with each other, but you're generally going to have a very large majority of one over the other. You're never going to have a 50-50 because it's not possible. Joy and self-doubt are not synonymous. They don't like each other. When you are genuinely abundantly joyful, it just edges out the self-doubt. But when you're filled and crippled with self-doubt, you can't feel joy. You can't even feel a baseline of like okayness, right? This was one of the habits I discovered that I was really messing up and that other people can stop messing up in their own lives, is the habit of how we treat ourselves, the habit of kindness. So there's six habits in the book that I wrote and all the work that I did research on and whatever, but there's two that really started off. It's acceptance, which is how you feel about yourself. And then there's kindness, which is how you treat yourself. And they're two different things, but they're sisters, you know? So acceptance is, you know, acknowledging this is who I am and I will love myself without condition. I don't need to love myself when. I can love myself now, warts and all, extra 15 pounds, negative 15 in my bank account, whatever your issue is, you can accept and love yourself as a whole sovereign being that is perfect in the imperfection and all of that other stuff. And this requires forgiveness of self. This requires like leaning into some of the stupid crap you've done and owning it and just being like, you know what? I did the best I could at the time with the information I had. Okay, cool. You forgive yourself. You love yourself. You affirm yourself on a regular basis, right? But then the kindness piece, this one's trickier and this one's a little complicated. I mean, honestly, they both are. But when it comes to kindness, like, people don't realize how absolutely dreadful they are to themselves. They're horrific, right? So when people speak to themselves in the mirror, they're going about their day, there's an internal silent monologue that half the time we don't even notice. But that's the stuff we need to be paying attention to. You know, because that's really where we end up getting a lot of cues about what, you know, what we need to be working on. In my case, I really needed to be mindful of discouraging thoughts because I was bullying myself. I would constantly be saying nasty things like, oh, this isn't going to go well, or, oh, you're going to fail at that, or they're not going to like you, or you're not pretty enough to go to this. You need 15 pounds of makeup caked on your face. You're too fat for this. Your butt looks weird in those jeans. You shouldn't wear that. Blah, blah, blah. Just this constant just jerk in my head, just really being so abusive to me. And like, the crazy thing is, like, yes, I endured domestic abuse. Yes, I like went through tons of bullying as a kid, but the biggest jerk in my life was me. And for most people, that is their case as well. So I needed to lean into learning to love myself the way I was, not setting a goal for myself of who I desperately wished I was, and then only loving myself once I became that thing the 15 pounds lighter, always a size 2, never had acne, certain amount of money in the bank, certain status. I'll only love myself when. No, I said, and I made a commitment to myself, I am awesome without condition. I'm great. I don't need to be perfect. My imperfections make me interesting, damn it. So, and they also bring me unique talents and gifts to the world that I wouldn't have otherwise, you know? So I forgave myself. I worked on my relationship with myself. I genuinely came to love myself, and I genuinely have become an absolute ninja at treating myself with extraordinary love. Like, I look in the mirror and I'm like, mm-hmm, still fabulous. You know what I mean? I like who's staring back at me. And it's like, irrespective of what I look like, I love that woman who she is, like, on the inside. And like, I could have my hair looking like a rat made a nest in there, and it doesn't matter. Like, my mascara could be down to my chin and I could have failed that day, and I still treat myself with kindness and love. This took me a while to figure out, but this has been the difference. Now, you might be wondering, does self-doubt still creep in? It does. But because I genuinely love myself, and because I'm in the extraordinary automatic default habit of treating myself with extraordinary kindness, when I see that self-doubt, I'm like, okay, I see you. Okay. And you can leave. Goodbye. Because it's almost like I'm coated in Teflon now. Pew, pew, pew. See you later. But like, you know, even having like a really bad day, and we still have them, you question like, oh my God, am I on the right path? I mean, even starting the new business, like, am I on the right path? Yes, I am. So I give myself permission to hold the space for the thought, but isolate the thought. No, no, no. Do not make it mean more than what it is. Do not make it mean anything about you. Isolate it for what it is and stop making it mean something else. Let it be isolated. So, I mean, just those two things alone have like really, really done wonders for self-doubt.
That is so good. And the way you language that, I think, made it easier to understand this. And I love the two parts, even these two habits, but the conditioning is, I'll love myself when, or I'll feel happy when I get there. And it's like, it's connected to something
right
in the future or something different, as opposed to, like you said, no, it's right now.
Yeah.
Regardless. I mean, I love myself the same when I'm have my most successful day and it's amazing. And I love myself the same when I just completely failed and I'm on my floor, you know, crying because I've made a huge mistake, but I still love myself the same in either case. And yeah, they both come with great lessons and great experiences and great stories. And, mm-hmm. and so, but you said even more in this that I really love, and I love how you break it into habits. And I know you're like the habit person. So we're going to talk about that.
Mildly obsessed. Go on.
But in other things, like you talk about, and I just so believe it. And so like in my place, being a money educator and coach and really helping people get good with their money, a lot of people in my space, they just talk about the mindset piece, meaning just feel better about money, like really heal your relationship with money and get spiritual with money and believe in this abundance mentality versus scarcity and,
yep,
and yada, yada, yada. And that's great. I mean, how we think, it's like what you said, it's like an acceptance in a way. But then there's not the follow up as to the act, like the yes. skill, the act, the do. Like it's the mindset, like how we think and feel about things. But ultimately, it's what we do with that, which makes all the difference. That's what produces the results on the other end and the circumstances or the situations that we want. Yeah. So what I listen to, it's like this mindset and love and this relationship with yourself, which is that mindset piece, but then the kindness, it's an act of kindness. Like, it doesn't matter how you're feeling if you're still treating yourself like shit, like if you're not taking care and these different things. So then it says, is the mindset really
yeah.
what it is if the act isn't there to match it? So share a little bit more about, yeah, mindset, but acting, skill development, the replacing maybe habits that are more destructive with, because habits are actions. It's what we do. It's the patterns we're in.
Absolutely.
So talk a little bit more about that, of moving to like the importance of habits, the importance of skills, the importance of actually doing versus just believing.
I would love to. Sure. Okay. So first of all, you and I may actually be soul sisters just because of how like much we're sharing a brain on this subject. you know, like with money mindset, with relationship mindset, like changing your thoughts and all that other stuff. It's like, it's only going to take you just so far. Like you've heard about like law of attraction and manifesting. You actually have to work your ass off too. You need to do both. You can't just wish it and think it into existence. You need to apply everything and like, you know, get your booty moving. So if you think about this within like the context of, you know, money or kindness or acceptance or like gratitude or any of these concepts, the only thing that's actually going to make the mindset actually do anything for you is action. And it needs to be repeated, correct, strategic action. It's not just taking any old action. I mean, like, listen, I started out in the world being, you know, a salesperson that would, just go out there and I would just start conversations, and I failed a lot. But in order to develop a proficiency with sales, you need to do it a lot. You need to do it strategically, and you need to pick up the exact correct, methodologies and, habits in terms of your behavior that will help you to become proficient and sell millions and millions, which I have. The same applies to learning how to make an omelet. You have to practice it. You have to do it. You have to mess it up. Here's the great example that literally everybody on this planet, well, mostly everybody understands: walking. Most people did not, you know, just start walking really easily. You know what I mean? They had to stumble, they had to fall, and they had to mess it up, but they kept at it. The persistence is why we walk around. That's the persistence is why we can run. It's because we develop the proficiency and we develop that muscle memory and the ability for things to become ingrained in our habit. Like, you know this, you don't have to think about walking. You just get up from your desk and go. Same thing with me. I don't think about it. I just do. And when you really master a habit with money, with how you treat yourself, whatever, it's not something you have to consciously think about. And that's the magic of, you know, everything that we're talking about. Like, you got to get it to be a natural default. So that new thing is your action. But the only way you're going to do that is by forcing yourself to do it when it's awkward, forcing yourself to do it when you're messing it up and it feels weird. And you're like, I suck at this. Uh-huh. Keep going. Because proficiency is on the other side of the suck. Keep going. So, you know, full transparency, when I was learning to be kind to myself, I sucked at it at first. Sure did, but I kept at it and I was persistent. And, the biggest thing with kindness and acceptance, those two things, is, a powerful, three-step process that I actually highlight in my book. It's three steps. Feel free to write them down. It is, identifying the destructive thought, giving yourself a powerful instructive thought, and then giving yourself, a constructive thought. Destructive, instructive, constructive. And let me walk you through what that actually looks like. It's so simple, right? But it's not easy. It's simple for a reason, because simple is what works. That's how we learn new things. Is if they're overly complicated, good luck. But this is simple. It's three things. So I'm going to use the context of like, I'm saying mean stuff to myself. I'll look in the mirror maybe, and I won't like my outfit for the day, and I'll feel like my butt's like out of control or whatever. The inner bully might say the destructive thought, and it would sound like, your ass looks enormous in those jeans, right? The instructive thought is the internal coach, the coach that ain't going to take that, the coach that's like, I don't think so. Okay. So the coach would then pipe up if you actually said in your head, that ass makes you look fat, or, you know, or whatever, the coach would pipe up and be like, is this really how you're going to live your life? Is this really how you're going to talk to yourself right now? This is not how you're going to learn to love yourself. I don't think so. So then you've just been schooled by yourself. So then what you do is you give yourself a replacement thought, the constructive thought, which is, now I look good in these jeans. And if people don't like it, they don't have to look, you know, like, I'll give you a similar, you know, another one. Like, it could be, I'm not going to do well in this sales meeting today. Inner coach pipes up. You need to encourage yourself right now and build yourself up so you can really crush this meeting today. your constructive thought, I am going to kick ass in this meeting today, and I'm going to do my absolute best regardless of the outcome, and I'm awesome. So you go through this transitive process, and you have to actually break it down and actually be that methodical and use the three steps, because we verbalize rotten stuff to ourselves. We think rotten stuff to ourselves throughout the day, right? But if you can catch it, the isolation is the first part, which is why I recommend journaling so much to people. When you catch it, you're catching the destructive thought, then your coach can pipe up, your inner coach, and be like, hey, I don't think so. Don't do this. Because your inner coach, they're there. They're just sitting there waiting to be used, right? Because we all have this coach. And then like our inner hero, the person in the future that truly loves ourselves, that believes in ourselves, they're there. They just need to practice. And that's where the habit comes from. The more you do this, you know, after a couple of months doing this, you won't even need to like do the coach anymore. After a while, you'll hear the nasty thought. You'll be like, psh, get a, no, mm-mm, go away, get out of here. And it becomes the natural default. And then after time, you won't even think the nasty thoughts anymore. Only the good thoughts will go in the mirror. So it's pretty life-changing.
My goodness, I just love that. And you just made it so easy. I mean, anybody can do that. It's just like one, mm-hmm. two, three.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about when you're as an executive coach and the coaching that you do, are you bumping up against some pretty typical, like pretty consistent, I guess, limiting beliefs or habitual patterns that are really robbing people of their joy, their happiness, their ability to say, I'm a rock star?
Yeah. I mean, I think people, human nature is human nature. And I don't care where you are on the totem pole. You could be, you know, the richest guy in America, or you could be like on the street. I mean, we all have habits, right? I actually think that there's a lot to notice that's kind of common with people. I would say the kindness, people really, really suck at being kind to themselves. People fail to accept themselves like in a big, big way. But the other thing that I notice is people, especially nowadays, people really struggle with a habit of being checked out. You know, we've got these tiny, amazing computers in our hands all the time, and people are sucked into that, or they're focusing on worrying about the future, or obsessing on the past. And, you know, people are just really like, you know, distracted. And that's a habit, you know. People also don't necessarily take action towards their goals. They have dreams. That is awesome. But a dream without a plan is just a wish. We know this. There's a reason why it's a saying. It's because it's true. And a lot of people, even those that are really, really successful, will lose sight of the pathway and like making things into tiny little incremental baby steps. You know, that's the habit of intention, is to take what you intend to do and take action on it, no matter how big or small, on a daily basis. And, you know, like I just launched a 90-day program. Okay, well, I have a lot to do, believe me. But like, I need to do little things every day. Sometimes it's just go to the post office and mail off a bunch of stuff. That's easy. You know, I don't have to do everything in one day, but people get overwhelmed. And when they're not kind to themselves, they don't accept themselves. It's easy to get overwhelmed because you're stuck in the belief, I can't do this, and the self-doubt. So when you actually look at all of it, it's how we treat ourselves, it's how we feel about ourselves, but it's also our relationship with what we do every day and how we spend our time. Do you wake up every morning and spend the first half an hour of your day farting around on YouTube? Or do you leave your phone in the bathroom like a smart person and spend the first half an hour of your day mindful and present with your breakfast or your coffee or your kid or your dog or whatever, and actually create your intention for the day and what you want to do? Do you give yourself that gift of showing up for you? Or are you showing up for people that are trying to make money off of you? You know, and this is actually consistent. Lots of people do this. And I got to tell you, people not focusing on how present they are and their intention and focusing on like how we're showing up to ourselves, like it's destructive. It will pull you away from your goals. Good luck getting really incredibly wealthy and incredibly joyful if you've got a crappy relationship with yourself. It's not going to happen. You can't, I mean, you know this, if you don't have the right actions every day to bring you toward your incredible wealth and joy, is it going to materialize? No.
When you said something else there as well, that, I mean, in your experience, how many are, they're starting their day on social media? They're starting their day to say, who responded to my latest post? Or, you know, so that's, it's starting out there somewhere to get some type of external feedback one way or another, either positive or negative or a combination, versus, like you said, it's like, okay, I have these intentions. I have these dreams. I have, you know, I want to create a certain level of success or impact so many people or launch this 90-day program. But if this self-doubt creeps in or whatever's happening, then it's so easily to be distracted by the stuff that feels like it's busy and a day's gone by. So how much do you think distraction by these smart devices and other, you know, news or media or just those things are distracting us from, are robbing us of joy and happiness?
I'd say a lot. I mean, I think, I mean, it's going to depend person to person, of course, right? But as with many things, it's not so much the what, it's the why. Why are we inviting so much distraction? Is it because we don't have enough that lights us up inside in our lives? Is that why we're seeking so much externalizing joy? If we have more genuine joy, like in our lives, and we have a great kick-ass relationship with ourselves, we're not seeking that external validation. Ooh, I got 15 likes. Oh boy. You don't care as much because you realize that you could get no likes, you could get 500 likes. You're still great the way you are. But like, I think people, you know, have already figured out that social media is addictive. The news is addictive. But it's a really, really dangerous space to be. And I, you know, I am conscious of my own social media use. And I go on regular house cleaning sprees because I pull anyone and everyone out of my feed across all social media that doesn't build me up and make me feel great. If I catch myself comparing myself, and yes, I do that because we all do that. If I catch myself in comparison, nope, I need to hide you. You are not good for me. This is toxic energy, and this is a habit I need to get into of defending my good energy. And I add good things. Like I've got a couple of things on my personal Instagram that all it is happy, warm, and fuzzy things. So like if I am scrolling through, my face is smiling so much, it almost hurts. You know, that's the kind of social media that we should be excited about and not like posting so people will say, hey, you're important, because that's really what's happening. Like anytime you post something, people are desperate to be important. I mean, I admit I want to be important. I want to matter, right? We all want to matter. We want to just be relevant and not be just a big nobody, right? And those stupid little likes and that crappy little red balloon, that gives us that false sense of meaning and purpose, but it's shallow, which is why we keep returning to the well, because it gives us like a 2-second yay, but that's it. We keep going back for the yay versus the big yay, which is, wow, like my life is grand. You know, like I feel amazing. Like I do matter. And it doesn't matter if I'm getting validation from likes. I get validation from me. And I am a wellspring and an unlimited supply of validation that I can have whenever I want.
Yeah. And something I love what you say, and it's wrapped up in, I mean, not being attached to what we do to give us meaning, but doing is important. So how much of these distractions are keep us from doing important things that will actually make us experience more of who we are and what we're capable of and why we're here. Why we're here is a matter of the impact that the work that we do and the imprint we put on the world is part of doing. It's not just sitting around not doing anything, being distracted or, you know, being medicated one way or another. And so that's really what I love about so much of your message is like, do something. It's in the habits. It's in the doing. It's being an actor in your own life. And I think sometimes we're distracted. Yep. Either we don't know what to do as to like, I don't even know what to do. Or let's say again, if when I'm, you know, in the space of money, it's like, I can show you what to do with money that's going to make you wealthy. But it's like there's an opposition to the doing. It's like, well, I don't want to do that. I just want to feel good. If I could just work on my mindset and do more of this, a little bit more nebulous, elusive, or esoteric piece, but I don't want to do that. I want somebody else to do that for me or
because they're riddled with self-doubt. I don't want to take the action because I might fail and then I'll feel bad. And because we're human beings, all of our thoughts and, you know, all that stuff regarding the action, they're all wrapped up in how it's going to make you feel. If you can actually remove how you feel from the action and be like, it doesn't matter how I feel, I'm doing it anyway, because my future self wants this, my current self wants this, and I can experience all of this and still be okay. Right? I mean, that's like life-changing.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the master habits. And so I think you've named a couple, but what are these master habits that you think can just radically change one's life if they can maybe replace old habits and patterns and move into different patterns and habits?
So there's six of them. I already told you a few. The habit of kindness, which is your relationship and how you treat yourself. Your habit of acceptance, which is how you feel about yourself. The habit of gratitude. And I want to be really clear. Everybody thinks gratitude's easy. You just make a list of all the stuff that's like easy layups. No. Deep soul shaking gratitude is when you can find a reason to be grateful for something like being abused, like I was. I'm grateful I went through that because look at all the fire that I discovered within me as a result. So I choose to change my perception of the world. So gratitude is the habit of your perception of the world, right? Then there's the habit of presence, which is focusing on right here and now, being with what is, not wishing it was something else, acceptance of what is, not focusing on the future or the past, but just being here and now. And also not being trapped in your phone, right? Or TV or, you know, whatever self-medication you pick. The habit of goodness, actually, and this relates to social media and news too. Adding loads of good things that contribute to your joy and contribute to you, like exercise or going for walks on the beach or making a date with your dog to go for a sunset walk every single day on the ocean, which is what I do. This is adding to my life, but it's also the removal, toxic people, toxic conversations, toxic people on my social media that make me feel bad about myself, news that just depresses me because I get sad about this horrible crap that goes on in the world. There's so much toxicity out there and we're constantly barraged by it on a daily basis. But if we safeguard our well-being and our goodness, that's a really powerful habit. And finally, the habit of intention. Intention is the powerful action we take every single day. It's getting clear. It's making inspired massive action, inspired tiny action, but damn it, move. And being in the habit of moving despite your feelings about it, suck it up, do it anyway. Those are the six habits.
Girlfriend, that is so good. And one other piece there that I'm really finding is that in this age of, we're easily distracted because there's so many things going on that for the best of us, I mean, it's like, oh, let me, you know, just pulling me over there without my even being aware that I was, you know, pulled out. So, but we're in this time that we're more connected than ever, yet people are more lonely and sad and hurting and in pain than ever before. They feel complete loneliness. And how much of this is that a lot of this is the habit of being with yourself with all the amazing things that you just shared. But what about the relationship piece, like the human to human piece that we're working on feeling great in our own skin and loving ourselves, but not in isolation necessarily. Like we need to feel good in isolation, but where's the joy in the connectivity and that I see you, I love you, I want to be with you. Laura, I just dig who you are and can we go deeper? And if I can do anything for you, I've got you, sister type of thing, but really, you know, not superficially. But really the human to human connection, the intimacy, affection, touch, real conversation that you don't get by swiping up.
Oh my God. It's crazy how much, all that stuff can take us away from the intimacy that we crave. So my experience has been, and not just in myself, but in my husband, in my clients and all that other stuff, when you actually master your relationship with yourself, your habits, your actions, blah, 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 you automatically, as a default, show up better to others, and you tend to lead through love. It's weird. So I remember actually going through a lot of this stuff with my friends. And when I was like testing some of my theories and like really doing some demos and beta testing of the program, I needed to know what worked and what didn't. And I also got some really neat surprises along the way. So when I was working on my own self, I just noticed that I was showing up in a way that was more kind, because I was getting so damn good at accepting myself and being kind to myself. It became automatic to actually provide more grace and love to my friends that needed someone to listen without judgment, or, you know, my husband that needed me to empathize more. Like, these things just became like so much easier. And my quest for adding goodness and gratitude, I found myself by default, not even part of my program, but I found myself calling my friends and just saying, you know something, I just made a massive list of things that I'm grateful for. And every single one of those things was about you. And I just wanted to share this list with you, because I was overflowing with so much freaking love and joy that like it came exploding out of me. And when you have that much joy, you want to share it. You don't want to post passive aggressive crap on social media. You want to actually call the people you love and be like, let's hang out. I'm grateful for you. I love you. You mean something to me. Let's go watch a sunset. You know, let's go have a glass of wine. Let's go have some oysters. You know, like, it's just like when you really fix the things within yourself and your relationship with yourself that are broken, your ability to show up for and with others is like, it's just transformed in a way that you just don't expect. Like, my marriage got better. I've never had the kind of love, communication, intimacy, and trust like I have now. My friendships are so much deeper, and I move 5,000 miles away from them, and we're still thick as thieves. I leave them little voice notes periodically. Hey girl, I love you. I appreciate you. I think you're radiant. Keep kicking ass, you know? And it's just, all this stuff is just coming out of me. And it's a weird thing to be when you're sad and you're feeling like crap in life. It needs to come out of you, right? Which is why we post passive aggressive stuff, why we complain, why we bitch. We do self-soothing behaviors like drugs and alcohol and TV and whatever. But joy is more contagious. And it comes out of you because it has to come out just like the other stuff does. But damn it. Like, when you are sprinkling so much love liberally over everyone that you love, your clients are happier because they feel more loved. Your spouse, your loved ones, your children, your everything. It's honestly like truly mind-blowing, and like the connections, it's just such a powerful thing. And like, now that I live here and I'm moving, you know, like my day around so I can prioritize my well-being, you know, like quality time and people. I always thought so, but quality time and people, that is what life is actually about. It's about experiencing this beautiful, magnificent, glorious world and the other people, because otherwise, what's the point?
Exactly. I love this. Wow. You're extraordinary. And one just comment to that is, in listening to that, there's the feeling of love, like just this feeling of love and abundance and joy and gratitude. But to your point, yes, it's so real. It's just, you want to do something with it. There's that do again. Like, you'd have to call someone. You want to share it with someone.
Yes.
You want to help someone. Like, it's so big. It has to come out of your body. But then it's more than a feeling. There's the action by calling somebody,
yes,
like doing something with
love. And not holding yourself back.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you're so awesome. All right, girlfriend, we are bumping against the end of our time together. And so I have a few final questions.
Sure.
And tell me, if I really knew you, I'd know that. If I really, really knew you, I'd know what?
If you really, really knew me, you would know that the world can be intimidated by me sometimes, but I am the squishiest, softest, sweetest, most generous person. And I love all animals, and I'm basically the happiest kid on the planet.
I love that. follow-up. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of who I am as a human. I've done lots of cool stuff in my life, but the best project I ever took on was me.
Brilliant. And then the final question, do a little myth busting. You're clearly a countercultural, unconventional, you know, thoughtful, conscious, just upending status quo. So do a little myth busting for me. If you were to call it one big fat lie from your point of view, what would you call out?
That's a really good question. I would have to say the first one that pops into my head actually is lots of people think that entrepreneurship is going to be easy. Nope, it is not. It will push you, test you, throw you through the meat grinder, show you everything you're made of, make you want to rip your hair out, make your heart race, but also make you love your life. Pull extraordinary greatness out of you. You'll have sleepless nights. You'll be moments when you're broke. Your integrity will be questioned on a daily basis. But damn it, if you ever want to test your mettle and see what you're really made of, be an entrepreneur. It is not easy, but it is totally worth every step of the way.
That's great. And what's your money mindset?
My money mindset? Yes, please. I mean, I love it. Like, I celebrate money. I find like a fiver in the washing machine. I'm like, yes. And I get excited. And I mean, I've gotten to a place in my life where I can afford to give generously. So I do at every turn. And I use my money to purchase things that give me joy. Those would be airline tickets. Those would be gifts for people I love, donations for organizations I care about, a home in a place that literally gives me goosebumps when I think about how lucky I am. Money's awesome. It's my biffles. It is a tool that has given me more than I can even imagine.
Okay, girl. Well, I love you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
We'll be putting access to all your programs and everything about you in the show notes, make it really easy to find you. And I just know people listening in are going to want to work with you.
Really sweet. Well, thank you for this. This has been so fun chatting with you. You ask amazing questions.
Thank you.
Welcome.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.